New York and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic Bee Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.theorganicbee.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView, or you can contact me directly at June Stoyer on Twitter. Today, my favorite rosarian in the whole wide world, Susan Fox, otherwise known as Gaga, is going to be talking about making the transition from urban rose gardening to country gardening. As people move from the concrete jungle to the serenity of the country, gardening habits and routines also must change. In addition to adapting to different growing zones, plant selection and care are also critical. Many people tend to forget about that, and this especially applies to roses. Roses, after all, are the most prized collection of any garden. It is said that Shakespeare once said, quote, "Of all flowers, methinks the rose is best." So I would like to welcome Susan Fox, founder of Gaga's Garden. And for those of you that are not familiar with this lovely award-winning rosarian, she is an avid horticulturist holding national awards for growing prize-winning roses and award-winning gardens. And she has, let me tell you, you take a look at all the information on her website, and if you happen to be lucky to visit her live and in person, perhaps she'll take you on the grand tour. So I would like to welcome to the show Ms. Susan Fox. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, June. It's such a pleasure. I always look forward to talking with you, and as we've often said, we could talk all day about gardening, about roses, and it's just a thrill to have a chance to chat with you about all of the areas of growing roses, and encourage viewers to call in or send a question via Twitter or email in any way that we can. I've took a commitment to encourage people any way I can to grow roses and tell them that it's really just not that hard. I think last time we talked, I told you that whenever people have asked me about growing roses, I think many times the only deterrent is that they perceive that there's some difficulty associated with growing roses, and I just want to stress again that it's really, really easy. It's just not that hard. So I think there's just a common misperception about a difficulty in growing roses. So my commitment is to tell everybody it's just not that hard. So get out there and plant some rose bushes.
So. Now, before they begin, Susan, when you're preparing for a whole new plot, and in your situation, you actually moved from one state to another. Now, considering the fact that you are a pro, and maybe, you know, you have other people out there that are seasoned gardeners, but, you know, just to refresh their memory, what are the first steps that you should take before you begin to figure out, okay, where am I going to plant and what am I going to do and where do I get started?
Well, you know, I think I'll just do a little bit of background, but I grew up in northern Illinois along Lake Michigan, and so I inherited my mother's rose garden and learned a lot from her, and then I inherited the rose garden, and I wanted to know how to everything about growing roses, and I went to the Libertyville Men's Garden Club, and they taught me just everything that you need to know from the very basics to showing roses. And so growing roses in a northern climate is very different from growing in, I think we got into talking about zones, so I'm from a southern climate of Texas. So here I'm growing roses in northern Illinois, where when you prune a rose bush, you dig an inch below the ground to find something living. You know, that's pretty easy to prune. You just cut it down to the ground and hope something survives. You know, if you protected it, hope that the bush comes back you know, that you've got something that will survive through the winter. So you move to Texas, and pruning is an art form. You know, you're got the bush that survived, and so it's just it's very different. I felt like when I moved from Northern Illinois to Texas that I had moved to a whole different planet. So then I moved to Texas with a corporate relocation, and I learned how to grow roses in that completely different soil. The soil was known as Texas gumbo. It was clay. But what I want to stress to everyone is that roses like to grow in pretty much the same soil everywhere. And it consists of soil amendments that are organics that consist of, no matter what your soil is, and I did the same thing here. I did it in Illinois, where you have a deep, rich, black soil. I went to Texas, and I took that Texas gumbo, and I rototilled it up. And those roses in Texas didn't even know that they were growing in Texas gumbo, because I rototilled the subsoil and added to that subsoil well-rotted humus or compost, and then a layer of Canadian peat moss, ground barks, and then seasoned manure, sand, garden gypsum, and then I added bone meal, and then you just rototill that up. And no matter where you live, that's the perfect soil mix that I found for growing roses. And I put in that same, I just was putting in the beds here. And whether you're doing an elevated bed or whether you're putting it your bed directly in the ground, if you will rototill or dig a deep hole, if you put in a mix, your roses, if it's well drained in the sand and those organic mixture, the roses are going to be pretty happy. They're not going to know they're growing in Texas gumbo or clay or whatever kind of soil that you have, if you've got that mixture of organics. And that's what I found is the perfect mixture for rose growing. Is that an easy answer? Did that sound easy to you? That's a lot of words, wasn't it?
Not really, because if you think about it, it's kind of, I tend to equate gardening with cooking, because, I mean, one of the beautiful things about gardening is that, you know, to a certain degree, you have some room for mistakes, whereas baking, everything has to be accurate. And, you know, every gardener, even professors that I've met, that I've, talked to about different plant situations where they've killed plants, no matter how careful you can be, things happen. I mean, I was a little mortified. I overwintered a fig tree, and lo and behold, in early March, the leaves started to come out, and then all of a sudden I had three little tiny baby figs, and then the temperature dropped, and so did my baby figs. So that was the end of that. And that's my own stupidity, because I moved my fig tree to my back porch thinking that it would get more light, not realizing that it was a little bit too cold back there, even though it's enclosed. It still was subjected to a slight temperature change. And, you know, plants are very sensitive, and people tend to forget that. And they tend to remember it after they've killed the plant or you know, done something damaging.
Exactly.
Now, when you moved, did you dig up any of your roses? Did you take anything with you? What did you do?
You know, I can't believe that you asked that, because I would have dug up every single one of them. I mean,
You didn't?
The hardest, no. It was the gut-wrenching to leave. Just think, that bed that I put in Texas. So I moved from Northern Illinois, and the bed that I put in was, okay, I built the house, and I'm going to put in my dream garden. And a dream garden in Texas was all right, this is going to be elevated beds. I'm going to put in a drip system. I rototilled the subsoil. I put in all these organic, the soil amendments. It was the perfect growing, absolutely. I even would take the soil test and send it to Texas A&M. I mean, perfect growing conditions. You know, the drip, laser drip watering system, so no water got on the leaves and burned the leaves. And so, and then started putting in the roses that, you know, I was showing roses in Northern Illinois. These were the roses that were winning all the awards. So here I'm going to leave, and I've just gotten 200 roses, and that garden won the Plano Large Garden Tour from the Dallas Rose Society. And now I find that a lot of those hybrid teas that I'm having a lot of difficulty finding some of those varieties. I had to find someone that used to work for the St. Louis Botanic Gardens. Like, I've driven all over the place trying to find the varieties that I need here. So I wish that I had dug up roses. I wish that I had moved roses and then furniture. You know,
I think a lot of people definitely can relate to that.
But you know, I just want to say something, because the next time we talk, June, I'm really we have such a long list of things that we want to do in this transition to country gardening, and one of them is to put in a little greenhouse. But I hope to be able to start and my own roses on their own root system. So I hope that one of these days, maybe next year, you'll be talking to me, and I will, I'm talking to one of the rose hybridizers that I had known, and he says it's easy. I tried to start a rose that I saw, a wild rose out along Lake Tahoe, that I started my own little, built my own little mini greenhouse, but I was not successful. But I don't want to get off topic too much. But I hope to be able to start some of my own roses on their own root system, and then we'll have a whole nother topic to talk about. And because roses are very hardy and strong, like miniatures that are growing on their own root system, so then we'll have other hours and hours of topics, and I'll be telling people how to do that. So. So far, I've, you know, just bought roses that are on grafted on root systems, and miniatures that are growing on root systems. But that's what I hope to do in my spare time. When I'm not, I've been off task for a while because I decided to clear the hill behind the little red barn, and then I said, oh, I thought I was going to scatter seed along there, and my husband said, no, let's plant some sort of ground cover. So I've been planting 600 winter creeper when I wasn't sliding down the hill.
Wow. Now, let me ask you a question. With the move, now I understand that you can only take so much, and it's really tough. What do you recommend to someone who can actually dig up the plants and take them with them?
You know, I said that, but I did take, there's a miniature that this friend had named after me, and I did take some of those miniatures. So I would suggest that you dig them up, and you can put them in some vermiculite and potting soil. I would say dig them up and put them in, put them in a pot. You should have seen, I didn't protect them this much. I just took some potting soil and peat moss and put them in smaller pots. And I didn't have a lot of time because the house sold fairly quickly. And so I put them in, they didn't come up easily, and I practically ripped them up by the roots and threw them in. Basically, I'm just going to tell you, I put them in these, pots here. I'm growing them in, they're potted, and they look great. So I brought them here, threw them in a pot, and they look great. So how's that for scientific transplanting? So, I was going to say, because I had I digress for a second. I had a wonderful neighbor. She was so lovely in Texas, and she asked me, I told her how she wanted to put in a rose bed, and I had students in Texas that I loved dearly that I would help them with start some rose garden. And my neighbor, I told her that it was best to put in elevated beds, and one day she came and she saw me in the front yard putting some roses directly in the ground, and she practically accused me of high treason. And I said, well, I know, I'm putting them in the ground because I decided to just throw them in the ground. And she also saw that I wasn't doing some of these other things. I said, I dug a hole, I threw some peat moss in, I'm putting them in the ground. I know that I'm breaking my own rules, but occasionally I just decide to do that. So, you know, sometimes a rose will grow just fine if you just decide you want to dig a hole and throw a whole bunch of peat moss in and stick it in the ground. So just like you said, plants are sometimes forgiving, and you might just decide to break your own rules and do things like that, and I do. So I ripped these plants out of the pot, threw them in a bucket, brought them up here, stuck them in a pot, and they look great. So,
wow. Now, let me ask you a question. When it comes to the catalogs, I mean, would you advise ordering any of the specific roses that you want ahead of time and then having them delivered to the new location?
I had to do that because I had so much difficulty in the cities. For instance, in Dallas, there were locations that I could go to and buy, one and a half grade roses in a pot. They were two, you know, large 2-year roses, three, and you know they're pretty expensive. But here, I had to buy bare root roses shipped to me. Because I couldn't find them. So I ordered from, I talked to him on Twitter. You probably have heard Chris, you mentioned him, Chris Van Cleve. He's president of the Birmingham Rose Society, and his name, he's known on Twitter as Redneck Rosarian. He's a wealth of information, and he also does Rose Chat. He will help anybody. If you go to his website, it's at Redneck Rosarian, but he mentioned a supplier out of Tennessee, and I bought some bare root roses, and they're doing quite well. In fact, two miniatures that I put in my outside the planter in the front yard, because we like Twitter so much, they're called All a Twitter, and I should have bought four of them. They're a really deep, deep orange, and I think I also mentioned, instead of planting begonias and annuals, I've switched out my annuals for the perfect perennial, which are miniature roses, that, because they come back every year. They grow in their own root system, and they're just beautiful. And you can, they're hardy, and you can prune them to, you know, to stay low in a planter along your house. So I planted All a Twitter miniature roses in the front flower planter. So, yes, My long and short answer is yes, I bought some bare root roses. They shipped to me. They arrived beautifully. I planted them. They've got buds all over them. They look great. So I think that's a good solution. And you have to get your catalogs early and order early, because when I went back to them, because I needed two more of those roses, they were already out of All a Twitter, gone.
Wow. Now, I have another question. Do you also recommend that perhaps people plant any varieties that they're not too sure if they'll last, especially in the new zone? Do you recommend potting in or planting them in pots?
I think I mentioned this to you before, June, and I know we probably have new listeners, but one of the all-time most winning rosarians and that I knew in the Chicagoland area, he lived in a shady home, and he used to grow all of his prize-winning roses in pots. And think of this dedication. He moved his roses based on the sunshine. Can you imagine? He would move his roses so they would get the, a rose needs 6 to 8 hours of sun a day. So he would move his roses so they got maximum amount of sun exposure each day. So now I haven't ever done that. I mean, I'm not moving those pots. I'm not going out there and moving those pots around all day.
No, I know.
but roses grow beautifully in pots. For instance, if you listeners that have apartments, because I have heard this from people. I have a great friend on Twitter, Margie Clayman, if you're listening, and she says, I live in an apartment. If you've got patios, miniature roses are beautiful on patios and decks, and they make just absolutely gorgeous arrangements, and you can plant them, and they come back, or you can bring them in the house in the winter and then just put them back out, and you don't have to keep replacing them like you do annuals. So not just miniatures, but you can buy yourself a great floribunda. For instance, if you like, a lot of people like the lavender roses, like Angel Face is a purple rose. I mean, there's lots of unusual colors, multicolor roses that you can in a floribunda and that you keep trimmed low and bring in from your patio and then put it back out in your patio. So there's lots of options.
Thank you, Susan. Now, I have a question for you. When it comes to companion planting, what flowers do you plant? What other plants do you plant around your roses so that you don't have to spray?
Remember, we've talked about that, and a lot of people don't realize that a high-pressure water wand will take care of so many pests. I mean, in the spring, I think I had told you that I bought, here, I didn't have to buy ladybugs because I have so many ladybugs, this must be where the people who sell ladybugs at garden centers come to get ladybugs because I have ladybugs everywhere. So ladybugs are a good little bug that eat aphids. And aphids are a pest that will, you know, when you see little tiny holes in your rosebuds, that's usually aphids because they just like to eat your rosebuds. So if you have a problem with aphids, just take your hose or water wand. You can buy them at any garden center. And most bugs that are on most little insects, you know, what people say are bad bugs on your plants that are eating your plants, you can take a water wand and wash them off. Another pest that goes after roses are called spider mites, and spider mites are a problem during the hot, dry seasons, the hot, dry climates. So I used to say if you start out in the summer, in the first part of the year, you have aphids, and then as soon as it gets hot and dry, then spider mites. And spider mites wash off with the water wand. You just take you take your water wand and they are underneath the leaf. And you can tell if you have spider mites if you can't feel them with your finger, they feel kind of like a grainy feel, but with a magnifying glass, it kind of look like salt and pepper. But you really know you have spider mites because they can do like a deforestation. They suck the moisture out of the leaves of the plant, and then the leaves just drop off. So another solution, water wand. That's how you get rid of them because you don't want to use anything that gets rid of the good bugs in your garden. And good bugs take care of, you know, they eat the pesky little spider mites, and ladybugs are good bugs, and these are the type of little creatures that you want living in your garden.
Thank you. And my next question for you, Susan, is how many roses do you put in a new bed? And can you talk about the size of the bed and, you know, what is a good gauge for somebody that is, looking to start a whole new bed? I mean, what restrictions do they need to consider?
Well, I think that's a really good question for me right now, because when I put over the years and I put the beds in Texas and I got more and more roses, I felt that at 200 roses and they were spread out. So when I was hauling, I used this big mixture of organic fertilizer, and I really like to talk about that because my husband, I was dragging bags of feather meal, and I just loved all of this mixture of, I actually bought bat guano and all of these great things. I just loved to mix up, you know, cottonseed meal and so feather meal and cottonseed, and I was dragging it around, and my husband got me this great big cart so we could mix up this organic fertilizer. Really what it's doing is building up the soil. So I think it's kind of distance. Where do you want, you know, how capable are you to get around and work on the bed and ease of working on the bed? So here, I guess I don't want to spread out quite the distance that I did in Texas. I had those beds all over. I had them in the front. I had them on the side of the house. And also, I think you need to consider where do you spend time outside and in the house? Where do you want to look at the garden? You know, where would you like the view? Where would you like to spend time looking at the garden? And do you want to spend the most time outside in the garden, or do you want to be in the house and viewing the garden? So I think, do you want a concentrated location of color so you can spend time there and spend most of your time working there, or do you want them spread out and having to take a lot of your tools and, you know, like I did, my cart full of my, finally when my husband helped, he's a solutions person, he didn't think it was the best idea for me dragging my bags and things around. He fixed this big cart full of my organic mixture and made me a big cup on a long handle so I could make it easier. But now I'm planning a more concentrated area. So we did put a big elevated bed. I'll put a picture on the website pretty soon. It's we put an elevated bed next to the deck, and I kiddingly said it's a Godzilla rose garden because it looks kind of massive, but it's 5 feet. I can give you the dimensions. I made a walkway, and I made it so I'd have two rows, and there's going to be room for about 30 to 40 roses in that bed.
Wow.
So it's going to be, and I put a great big bird bath in the center of it.
Now that's interesting. bird bath, the whole topic of bird baths, it's interesting. A colleague of mine was talking about this very subject the other day, and he's got a butterfly garden. And there was a gal from another one of the committees that he's on who wants to do something, create some type of a garden bed to attract more birds. Mm-hmm. So he was saying, well, if you have it too close to the butterfly garden, basically all you're going to do is create almost like a food bar for the birds. So it's just kind of interesting. Now, when it comes to the bird baths, in a rose garden, what do you recommend? Like, where would you place a bird bath? I mean, it seems like a ridiculous question, but it's not. It's actually quite important.
Do you know, a friend of mine told me that, and I did this in Texas, and I had more, it created more time. She said that if you really want birds to come and to watch birds, to put, that they really needed water to drink, in Texas, and do you know that she could put it on the ground? You should have seen. I put a, I had a just a tray, like a bottom tray that you put under plants, and I put it on the ground, and you should have seen how many birds came not to take baths. They came to drink water in Texas. I literally put out water for drinking for, and the critters, the fence, there was a windstorm and part of the fence was down enough for little creatures. And here I was in an urban setting. And one morning I got up and I had a whole family. Just think, in the city, I had a mother raccoon and two babies. I couldn't believe what I was seeing before. You know, early in the morning, I saw these glowing eyes. So I had a family of raccoons in that. You know, here you would say bird bath is on the ground, and constantly little creatures are coming to that little water source. So you think bird bath, but really what it ends up being is a source for water. So I've done that ever since, is I've put water on the ground because it brings little creatures, I guess, I don't know. Now that I've only been back in Illinois, I don't know, because there's so much more water here than Texas. I'm not sure. I haven't seen that many creatures going to the bird baths that I put out because there's so much more water here. But in Texas, it was, even with the sprinklers in the heat, little creatures were drawn because they needed water so much more. So I don't know if I answered your question, June, but I didn't ever see any birds. Chasing, I had a lot of butterflies there, but I didn't see, because they had more birds there, I didn't see them going after the butterflies. You know, I didn't see that happening. You know,
interesting. Oh, of course. Now, let me ask you another question. When it comes to the different types of materials that you can use to act as guides for your roses, or, you know, just different types of the cages and whatnot, what do you recommend? I mean, should you mix it up? I mean, what seems to be the most appealing? I mean, if you don't have room for an arbor, what else? What other ideas do you have that are a little bit creative, more than, I'm just talking about more than going out to a garden center and plopping down a couple $100 for this, that, and the other thing? I mean, what are some of the more creative ones that you've seen?
Well, you mean like, well, for the elevated bed, you mean?
Yeah.
We used, in Texas, just landscape timbers that were really cheap. You know, they were inexpensive. Then for this bed that we put in, we did use railroad. We went ahead and used railroad ties, which I looked up because I know there'd been a lot of controversy about the coating that was on them, but that's if you're going to use for vegetable gardens. You know, what I researched was the problem was with creosote if you're going to use for food. I didn't see if there was any problem, and these were like aged, and they're cheap. You know, still are cheap, but if you're going to grow food, I still don't think that's probably a good idea. I still don't know that if it's any kind of problem for things like roses, but I think that if you wanted to use some of the, around here, they have places that sell some of the flagstone, you know, that you could put kind of a border and still, I don't think that's really expensive. And then if you're going to just dig directly in the ground, and then there's still just the option of dig a big hole just so long it's well drained, and you use the soil amendments that I mentioned, your roses are going to do just fine. They just don't like to have their feet wet. It just has to be well drained. And if you add plenty of the peat moss, compost, and sand, then you don't have to worry about it. So just as long as, don't overwater them. You know, a lot of people don't realize this, but established roses are very drought resistant, and they only require like think of during the summer, hot summer months, they would only require like a big bucket of water a week, because if you overwater roses, it really encourages a shallow root system. So you need to deep water just once a week, and that encourages a deep root system, and then they're really very forgiving and drought resistant. So they have a smaller, during the hot summer months, they don't bloom quite as often, and the blooms are smaller because they kind of go into a little bit of a survival mode like everything else. But they need, you know, about maybe 3 to 5 gallons a week in the hottest part of the month. So that's pretty drought resistant. A lot of people don't realize that they can survive some really hot. I mean, I had all those roses in Texas when it was 100 days of 100 degree weather. So, and they survived just fine.
Now, Susan, let me ask you a question. Like right now in the Northeast, the temperature has been dropping. Mm-hmm. What do you do if you know your roses are they're starting to succumb to the warm weather, and then all of a sudden you have this cold snap like what we've been experiencing here? What do you do at night? Do you take a tarp and cover them? What can you do, if anything?
You know, the roses, unless it's really, really gets cold, should be fine, because do you know, in when a hard frost, it takes, you know, I'd have to really check, but when it turns cold, like in the fall, it takes more than 3 to 5 days of 23 degree weather to actually, for roses to actually just come to a killing frost. I mean, they're very hardy. So, like here, it's gotten down to, the roses have already budded out. They've not bloomed yet in zone A, but it's gotten down to 30 degrees. Now, if it got into the 20s, I'd get out there and try to. New roses, let me back up a little bit. New roses that I planted, I would be concerned about. Established roses, I wouldn't be as concerned about. Does that make sense?
Of course, because the new roses are not going to be as stable.
Hardy.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, so new roses, yeah, I really felt for you about your fig tree, because I couldn't believe what I did. I took the same thing here. We had warm weather, and then I have a desert rose, which now I went online last night and said, how cold will it tolerate? And it said, don't move it outside until it's 50 degrees at night. Well, I took it outside, and it's way too soon. I actually put pictures of it up last year of how magnificent it bloomed. More beautifully here, a desert rose bloomed more beautifully here in Illinois than it ever did in semi-arid Texas.
Figure.
Yeah, and I put it outside. It's been in the house doing perfectly all year. I stick it outside, and it goes back down to, just like you, 30. I think if I kill that, you're going to see a whole post about me mourning over why I stuck it outside and didn't put a blanket over it. You know, so yes, we're having the same thing. All of a sudden, it's going back down into dangerously close to in 30 something. And I put the jasmine outside too. So yes, I went outside the other night and taking out the moving quilt and covering it up. But the roses I've left alone because they're more hardy. Even I didn't even cover up all of Twitter. I did a post where I stuck a box over it for a couple of days after I put it in, though, because it got cold. I have a feeling.
Sometimes that's basically all the best that you can do, you know?
Yes.
I mean, you take what you can, but you don't want to smother the plants. Now, another question that I have, and this is coming from Janet on Twitter, and she'd like to know, do you have any particular color scheme that you go by when you're planning a new rose bed?
You know, tell Janet, I had so much fun when I got the roses. I ordered first I got the roses from for the floral bund to bed, and I wrote them down on a piece of paper, and I put down heights, and I put down colors, and I actually planned, you know, I didn't want to put whites together, and I didn't want to put, you know, two talls together. And, you know, floral bundes are pretty consistent, but I actually wrote them out, the colors, you know, like short and bushy, you know, they were going to stay a certain. So I do try to plan that, although my mother used to say, nature doesn't plan colors like that, you know, just stick them in the ground. But I picked up this these roses that I got yesterday, and I will take my American Rose Society handbook for selecting roses, and I'm going to write down the colors for each one and the heights, because I would rather start in the center with this new bed. I want to start in the center with the tallest rose, and I'm going to work out from the tallest to, you know, and go out to shorter roses. Because I didn't do that in some of the beds in Texas, and I just didn't like the look of it. So I don't want to have two whites together. You know, I don't want to have two deep pinks together. So yes, I do want to plan a little bit, and I don't want to have two dark reds together. And I really like to have a red and a yellow. I think red and yellow really offset each other. So that's kind of what I like to do.
Well, do you use the same? Do you use
varieties?
Do you use the same varieties? And is it a wise idea to mix other types of flowers in with the roses, or should it just be solid roses?
I just put a rose bed. Roses I just put together, but that one garden that I put in all floribundas in that first garden that I did. But in the next garden, the first row that I put in is all hybrid teas, which are a taller single stem, you know, variety of rose. But I'm probably going to mix hybrid teas and brand of floras in that bed, which, you know, I'm going to put probably floribundas and hybrid teas and grandifloras, just because I just happen to get all those types of roses. So you can mix any kind of all those roses, but I'm not going to put anything but roses in there. No, you can. I mean, there's people who do. I mean, my daughter-in-law said, I've heard tomatoes and roses are great. I mean, she said, why don't I put some tomatoes in there? But, you know, you can do whatever you want. It's just however you want to plan your garden.
Oh, of course. Now, speaking of which, if you do have a situation, the unfortunate situation, should I say, where the new roses that you've planted die, what do you do? Do you just dig them up and plant something else? Do you leave the soil rest? Do you add some compost to it? I mean, what should you do?
You shovel prune it. I love that expression. That my mother, I don't know if it was original, but she coined that phrase. And shovel prune it means you dig it up and she had another phrase. She said, one time I heard her, she looked at this rose and she said, bloom or die. And that was her. So I used to, I had the main garden, and if a rose didn't produce well in it and it was just kind of going along half-heartedly, but I didn't have the heart to shovel prune it and, you know, throw it over the fence and burn it, so to speak, not really just, you know, throw it out. I would put it in, I used to call it rose purgatory. That was a section of the garden where it was just given another chance, you know, to redeem itself.
Hmm.
So I would dig it up, plant it someplace else, hope it would do better, and then go back before it went on to rose heaven. But now I just dig it up and throw it out, get another rose, forget about it.
Hey, you know, it's always interesting to hear what other people do, you know. Now, this is another question that I'd like to ask.
Oh, wait,
you.
I,
Yes.
There's one more thing, because, you know, I bought a couple of, my husband had a spot where he wanted to buy a couple of knockout roses. You see how I almost feel like I have to justify buying a knockout rose, because knockouts to me are just landscape shrubs. So, and I can see plainly that the grower has fertilized them. They have fertilizer burn. And if anybody buys a rose and they can see that the petals are kind of browning on the edges, that is clearly fertilizer burn. Don't feel like you're killing it or anything. They've just over-fertilized it. And you can usually bring a bush out of that by just putting water to it. Just, you know, give them extra water. Someone definitely over-fertilized these bushes before I got them. So just, if you keep, give them a little extra water until it dilutes, you know, whoever way over-fertilized these bushes. So that's just a little tip.
Thank you. Now, one of the questions that I have for you is, well, from the audience, what I was saying before, this is coming from Dr. Ron. He'd like to know, if you want to grow roses specifically for cutting or for drying, are there any particular varieties that you recommend?
Yes. I would recommend hybrid teas, the grandifloras, or floribundas. And I say that if you want that first, I think I had mentioned the first rose garden I put in here is a floribunda rose garden, and the reason he might really like that for cutting is because the floribundas are known for their profusion of bloom and large clusters and trusses that have more than one bloom in flower at any time. So I love to take a vase and make a, if you like a long stem rose, then you want a hybrid tea. But for the long stem roses that a hybrid tea produces, it takes something like, I know people who know exactly how many days it takes to produce a flower on their bush. When you show roses, it can take 36 days. So it takes a little longer. But if you want to produce just those type of, on the cover of flower, what's the name of that lawn and garden magazine or house and garden magazine?
Mm-hmm.
I love to take a vase and just make a ball of flowers, then put in floribundas and just cut. I've made arrangements for people that I just cut as many flowers as possible, cut the stems low, and just put them in a vase and just pack in as many flowers, and you will not believe how many people will. I've taken them to people in hospitals or as gifts,
nice.
And they just light up any room. Put as many flowers and just pack them in, and it makes a magnificent arrangement. And just it just looks like a ball of flowers. And it's just cut them off of your floribundas, and they're just you don't even have to be know anything about flower arranging. Just pack them in as tight as you can, and make it as low to the vase as possible.
Thank you. My next question is coming from Yvonne. She'd like to know, do you have a particular favorite flower that has a really wonderful fragrance that you'd like to share?
I just replaced that particular variety yesterday, and when I drove 69 miles to this lady, her name is Diane Bruckman, and she has Rosy Acres, and she had the rose, and it's called Fragrant Cloud. And in her, as soon as she opened the back of her vehicle, I could smell the flower, and it was my mother's favorite. And it's a hybrid tea, and that's the name of it. It will probably always be one of my favorites, and I would look and seek to keep it in the garden. But Fragrant Cloud, and it had two flowers in bloom, and it's just amazingly beautiful fragrance, and it stays fragrant. And if you ever find a rose called Dolly Parton, Fragrant Cloud is a...
I've seen them, yeah.
Have you seen it?
Well, yeah.
Well, it's a parent rose to... The Fragrant Cloud is one of the parent roses to that. And because Dolly Parton is aptly named, it produces a bloom that's, you know, it's like a salad plate. It is a magnificent rose, and it also has a fragrance, but I still love Fragrant Cloud. If you can find the rose, then get it. It's amazing. It's a deep, deep orange or salmon orange color.
Thank you. Now, the next question, we are getting close to the end, but I thought that this was a cute question. This question is coming from Paul. He'd like to know I have seen that there are a number of celebrity roses. Which is your favorite?
Do you know, it just came in my mind. So I have to, you know, they say this, the first one. I had two Barbara Bush roses in my garden, and she may not be the celebrity that you thought of, but, you know, that was just the most regal rose bush, and Barbara Bush is a pretty regal lady, so that came to mind, and I really did like it, but, and we just talked about Dolly Parton, but I had...
I like the Paul McCartney rose. I remember seeing that. That had such a great fragrance.
That came to mind. That there are really some wonderful.
So Gaga, when are you going to have a rose named after you?
Well, you know, I told you the rose that the hybridizer in he's in Grand Saline. He named a little miniature after my middle name. So I have. My middle name is Valeria, but he said, well, I don't have any more. You'll have to send me some back so he can produce some more. So that's what I thought I would try to do is try to start some more of my own. Because if I were to lose these, then that would be the end of her. So I'd have to see what I can do.
Thank you. Another question from the audience, which I think is quite interesting, this pertains to miniature roses. The question is from Rachel. She wrote, what type of miniature roses are really hardy, especially in colder climate?
You know, did you say her name was Rachel?
Yes.
You know, miniatures are hardy, period, because... they grow on their own root system, and they are perennials. In other words, you know, they come back, even though they lose their leaves in the winter. They're just strong, hardy plants. So tell her I don't know of any that are more hardy than others. They're just really strong, hardy plants that live through the, you know, they just, like I said, lose their leaves during the winter, and then they come back. Like all of them that I haven't ever lost a miniature over the winter. You know, some of the hybrids and some of the grand floors, some of the others that may not overwinter. I haven't ever had a miniature that did not live through the winter. So you can pretty much now. I don't know some minis that you see that you get from florists that, you know, that don't have a name. Now, I can't say about those. I think I would go online and buy some of them that have names, and they have the cutest names. Like, they have names like Giggles and Perrine and Kristen and, it escapes some of them, like Pixie Rose. And, I mean, they just have adorable names. They're like, I just said, all of Twitter. But you can order them from suppliers, but they're just a strong plant. They're stronger than their more sensitive roses that were not grown originally on their own root system.
Thank you. Now, the last question, this is coming from Justine, and she wrote, I'm getting married, and I'd like to know if you recommend any particular roses for bouquets.
Oh, you know,
great question, huh?
Yes, because florists get different. I mean, they get some of the different varieties that I don't know as well, because my dear friend in Dallas, her sister got a certain variety of rose that she loved so much that I went on a quest to get the rose, and then I planted it and got us two of them, of which she lost hers. And you're going to say, well, did you dig that rose up? No, it's still in the garden. It's still in the garden in Texas. So what she can do is I would go online. It just escapes me, some of them. I've seen some of them that are decide on a color, and then also roses. I was looking. Roses colors symbolize certain things. Just look online and see, like, yellow roses symbolize loyalty and friendship, and red roses, and see what color she likes, and then, you know, whether the color schemes, and then look up the names of some of them and see what florist. It'll depend on what roses they can get and what time of year it is. And then cost is going to be a factor. So I hate to tell her, because, you know, I had two roses named Love, which is a red and a white. And a lot of people might like that, but I don't know if you could get it. So I hate to tell her that, when it might cost a fortune, you know. So see what you like and what they might be able to get without costing you your whole floral budget.
Thank you. Now, do you have anything special that you have coming up for this new growing season that you're doing that you've never done in the past that you'd like to just talk to our audience about?
Well, I put in some roses that I've never... This year, I had to order, as I told you, when I put in the garden in Texas, I put in, the roses were potted, they were more mature. I ordered bare root roses. I don't think I ever remember working this hard to get these to get.
You're right.
Good. So we put in this land, again, this is zone 6A, and this one garden, this elevated garden, the land is hilly. So it's like you asked me what the dimensions were, so to put in the garden was 5 feet and on a slope. So to haul in that amount and that level of soil amendment. So I guess I never imagined that I'd have to haul in that much soil, that much soil amendment. So I guess the transition from urban, here I was saying that I was an urban farmer. I think I didn't realize I was going to be working quite this hard to get this rose garden in. And so I'm putting in some new varieties, and I will have in maybe 50 roses. And I think I say to myself, well, I think that'll be enough for this year, since I didn't know I'd be planting 600 winter creeper in between and all the other things that I need to be doing. But I say 50 is enough, but then I'll run into some roses, and I think, well, I better get some more. But I think I didn't plan quite as well with the heights and the colors as I did, and I'm able to correct some of the things that I wanted to do in Texas that I didn't do, and I'm doing here. So if that makes any sense.
Yes, it does. And, you know, that's the greatest thing about gardening. You can always start a new garden bed and start fresh. Susan, we are out of time. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. And, folks, check out Gaga's Garden. And, Susan, what's your website?
It's www.gagasgarden.com. It's GAGASgarden.com. And if you have any you can leave a comment or any questions at all, or any way I can assist. I'm glad to answer any questions or help anyone and any way I can. And thank you so much for having me, June. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Susan. And thank you, folks, for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic Food Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, folks.